Wednesday.
You will not attempt to adjust your radio dial.
The show is going in another direction. You're going to have to keep up with it. Very intelligent.
What's going on at this point?
How is it going so far?
I'm pressing slow, but I'm going to pull up.
President Trump has officially resigned from the company operating the Palm International Hotel in Washington.
Now the rest of them, my wife's left. Red man, what do you mean you don't work for me?
Is Donald Trump like Cyrus from the Bible? This is according to Michael Brown, one of the top biblical commentators alive right now. I've got a little essay by him to get into. Ever since Donald Trump began to surge as a candidate last year, Christians have been pointing to the book of Isaiah and comparing Trump with the ancient Persian king Cyrus. Some have even claimed that God has revealed to them that he will use Trump for the good of America, just as he used Cyrus for the good of the Jewish people, even though Cyrus was a pagan king. Could this be true? Let's first look at the biblical and ancient Near East evidence. Cyrus, whose name was pronounced Koresh in Hebrew, became king of Persia in 559 BC and conquered Babylon in 539 BC. He is mentioned in a majestic passage in Isaiah where the Lord says of Cyrus, "He is my shepherd, and he shall fulfill all my purpose," saying of Jerusalem, "She shall be built, and of the temple your foundation shall be laid." In other words, Cyrus would be the one who would cause Jerusalem to be rebuilt after it had been destroyed decades earlier by the Babylonians. But there's more that Isaiah says about Cyrus as the prophecy continues into chapter 45. Quote, "Thus says the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have grasped, to subdue nations before him and to loose the belts of kings, to open doors before him that gates may not be closed. I will go before you, Cyrus, and level the exalted places. I will break in pieces the doors of bronze and cut through the bars of iron. I will give you the treasures of darkness and the hordes in secret places, that you may know that it is I, the Lord, the God of Israel, who call you by your name. For the sake of my servant Jacob and Israel, my chosen, I call you by your name. I name you through, though you do not know me." Notice the beginning and the end of this passage. First, Cyrus, a non-Israelite king, is called God's anointed, a term elsewhere only used for Israelite leaders. Second, Cyrus, although called by the God of Israel, doesn't actually know the God of Israel. Instead, like the vast majority of people in the ancient world, he worshiped different deities in the form of idols. In fulfillment of this prophecy, the scriptures record how Cyrus made this decree to the Jewish people living in Babylon, where they had been taken in exile. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, "The Lord," meaning Yahweh, "the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you of all his people, may the Lord Yahweh, his God, be with him. Let him go up." And that's from 2 Chronicles. So a pagan king encouraged the Jewish people to return to their homeland and rebuild their temple, also helping to finance the endeavor. But Cyrus did not only do this for the people of Israel. This became a standard Persian policy, allowing exiles to return to their homelands and rebuild their temples as subjects of the Persian Empire. We know this from the famous Cyrus cylinder that was discovered in 1879. Thus, we read there that Marduk, the chief god of the Babylonian pantheon and called the king of the gods in the text, took the hand of Cyrus and called him by his name, proclaiming him allowed for the kingship over all of everything. We also read in that, we read in that text that Cyrus restored the various idol temples in his empire, which gives further confirmation to the biblical account. So here it is. Could be Marduk, I guess, but Marduk is given credit for the reign of Cyrus. In the Bible, it is Yahweh, the God of Israel, and the only true God who takes the credit. Obviously, Cyrus did not know him, just as Isaiah said. Could could Donald Trump then, pardon me, then be a modern day Cyrus? Could it be that Trump, like Cyrus, clearly does not know the Lord in a real and personal way, but still could be used by God to accomplish his purposes? As the saying goes, let God be God, meaning it's up to him to do what he wants. Only he can answer this question for sure, or from a more secular perspective, only time will tell. What's clear, though, is that God did not raise up an idol-worshipping king to rule the nation of Israel. That would have been a curse rather than a blessing. In contrast, Christians are talking about God raising up Trump to lead America, which would be very different than Cyrus being used to help exiles return to Jerusalem and rebuild it. That doesn't mean, of course, that Trump could not be a Cyrus type of figure. It simply means that the parallel breaks down there when it's applied. But there is another possibility to consider. And there was another ancient king named Nebuchadnezzar, and he's in the book of Daniel, by the way. The Babylonian leader who decades before Cyrus became king led his armies to destroy Jerusalem, burn down the temple, and send the Jewish people into exile in 586. He too was an idol worshiper. Yet shockingly, Yahweh called him my servant, stating plainly, behold, I will send for all the tribes of the north, declares the Lord, and for Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and I will bring them against this land, meaning Judah and its inhabitants, and against all those surrounding nations. I will devote them to destruction and make them a horror, a hissing, and an everlasting desolation in Jeremiah 25. So Cyrus was anointed by God to restore the Jewish people from captivity and to rebuild Jerusalem after Nebuchadnezzar, as a vessel of divine judgment, was called by God to send the Jewish people into exile and to destroy Jerusalem. Two pagan kings, one raised up to bring judgment, the other raised up to bring restoration. Is Donald Trump a Cyrus or a Nebuchadnezzar? If either, let God be God, and only time will tell. But while we wait and watch, vote and act, let's not forget to pray, God have mercy on America. The one thing of which we are sure is that this is a very critical season in the history of our nation. So this was written back in March 12th, 2016. So it's been about a year. It's been about exactly a year, as a matter of fact, missing a couple of days. So let's just call this a year old. Kind of interesting. It's been out there. I thought I would bring it up for the show so you could listen to it and make your decision. And some of you are deists or agnostics or atheists or whatever. You might find it interesting as well. Probably, I would think a lot of the people who listen to this show have some either Catholic or Protestant orientation, more Mormon, whatever. So you might find it a little bit more notable. Let's get into that later. Let's get into, in the first place, let me get into you for you some news that came out. But, you know, one of the things that was kind of notable to me is that Donald Trump has been as enthusiastic about the Bible and Christianity as any American leader that I've ever seen. I'm not claiming that he's Christian. I have no idea. But I will say that it's unusual that you get someone who's so really out of the, you know, out of the closet, out in the open, because normally speaking, Christianity is seen as a weak spot for a lot of these people because, for whatever reason, because this country has become increasingly secularized, that people react to it as if it is a negative, something that has to be mentioned, but at the same time kind of kept tucked away a little bit. And so this president is kind of the opposite. I don't claim to know what he believes, but I found the fact that he's willing to be he's the most unapologetic champion of Christianity that I've seen. And he could just be filling out checking all the boxes for his people, the support of his people. people that put him into office. And that's possible. Outside of that, I mean, I think it's kind of an interesting philosophical, you know, if he's trying to follow along this line as an intellectual exercise, as an attempt to, you know, he could be seeking his way. He could be a new Christian or whatever, and using this as a roadmap, which could explain why he seems more conservative now than he did, say, 10 or 20 years ago. So anyway, I'm going to bring in some, maybe in a half of an hour, start that analysis on Cyrus. I'll give you a little bit more information, but, I thought it was kind of intriguing for you. All right, we'll take a break and get into some news before we do that. Little feeds don't fail me now. 6:17 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. Pardon me, I've had a little bit of a frog in my throat, but 523-1450 to call in. And if you're totally opposed to this, if you think this is ridiculous, if you think that Donald Trump is a devil, please call in. Give us your argument. We'll be right back.
To tell you truth, but girl, you can never make mistakes. I got something happening down this road. I bet you my last dollar, girl, I could love you love the most.
All right, so we had been talking, I think, off and on for weeks or months about these, and I think I've been talking about this for a couple of years now, this idea that, I'll just kind of throw this out to you before we get into this later, but there is this idea that comes out of the left that these people are called, and, or, you know, their history calls them, or humanity, probably the best way to say it is to kind of, you know, humanity is in need, is desperately in need of these people. And you can fill in the blank, but Obama communicated to people. I think this is one of the affectations of sociopathy, is this idea that you're unique, only you matter. Other people are not as important as you. It fits right in with this leftist model of leadership that is so, historically speaking, is so extraordinarily destructive, has almost destroyed the world in a couple of wars. And this messianic leadership, this secular messianic leadership in the form of Stalin and Mao and Lenin and others, recently Castro, who just passed away, they are called in to run a secular kingdom to save people. And I was explaining to somebody yesterday, if you go back into the history of all this stuff, you go find this guy, Auguste Comte, or Comte, a philosopher in Paris, where else, of course, who comes along and has this mental breakdown and is put into a clinic, and Dr. Escarol's clinic. He remarkably comes out as uncured and starts doing his philosophy again. And his philosophy changed from before he went nuts into a very dark and scientific. He demanded that everything be measured by science and society, which is up to till today, very much influenced by Comte's thinking. And he wanted a religion of mankind. And that's what these people are, is kind of the priests and the bishops and the popes of this kind of secular religion. It's all very, very kind of interesting. But all right, along those lines, Senator Warren, who is another one of these people who's a socialist, she kind of sounds like a little girl when she's talking. She just sounds like she doesn't know what she's doing and tries to always present herself as the most well-meaning and harmless person, and then just says and does all these evil things. She beat Scott Brown because he refused to run as a conservative, but she's been the leadership. A lot of people were calling her to run, not on the strength of any record. She's just been a law professor for most of her life, and she lied to get into the University of Pennsylvania Law School teaching by pretending to be a Native American. And this status is so important, females and Native Americans and minorities, that they just kind of ushered her in, but she would have never gotten in. She didn't have that kind of background to get in there. But anyway, so she's a demagogue, person who is just, you know, the thing that I find offensive about this radical leftism is the claim that they're always right, that nobody else knows anything. Everybody else needs to sit down and shut up. And so they can run everything, and then they immediately run everything into the ground like Obama did. Here is a little bit of a thing where Senator Warren attacks Jeff Sessions through a letter, and she's either too dumb to realize that it's violating the rules of the Senate, or of course she's up there, you know, according to her, she's up there to tell the truth. Coretta Scott King, because Coretta Scott King was married to, you know, is associated with Martin Luther King Jr. Everything she says is pure and is not political either. But anyway, here we go.
It's been a long uphill struggle to keep alive the vital legislation that protects the most fundamental right to vote. A person who has exhibited so much hostility to the enforcement of those laws.
The senator is reminded that it is a violation of Rule 19 of the standing rules of the Senate to impute to another senator or senators any conduct or motive unworthy or becoming a senator.
Mr. President, I don't think I quite understand. I'm reading a letter from Coretta Scott King to the Judiciary Committee from 1986 that was admitted into the record. I'm simply reading what she wrote about what the nomination of Jeff Sessions to be a federal court judge meant and what it would mean in history for her.
This is a reminder, not pertinent necessarily what you just shared. However, you stated that a sitting senator is a disgrace to the Department of Justice.
Senator Steve Daines from Montana was the presiding officer at that moment, and the presiding officer keeps the rules, which are basically a variation of Robert's Rules of Order. And so this idiot bimbo, Senator Warren, just keeps going because she's there to tell the truth, right? She's there to cripple all of Trump's nominees.
I think that may have been Senator Kent. Although I would be glad to repeat it in my own words.
The rule applies.
So she's too dumb to realize you can't attack someone. You can't get up and say so and such is a Nazi. You can't get up and say that Orrin Hatch or any other senator is a freaking sociopath in the Senate, because the Senate is a collegial, is under collegial rules and friendly rules. And so this lady says, well, I don't need this letter. I'll just get on the record and say what a monster Jeff Sessions is, because she's either so obtuse or self-righteous or both.
Then I'm
to imputing conduct or motive through any form or voice to a sitting form of words includes quotes, articles, or other materials.
So quoting Senator Kennedy, calling then a nominee Sessions a disgrace, is a violation of Senate rules. It was certainly not in 1986.
In the opinion of the chair, it is.
What an idiot this lady is. I mean, how are these people helping their cause? So she thinks she can get up there and sneak through the rules in an insinuation that Jeff Sessions is a Hitler.
So let me understand then.
And the senator is warned.
So can I ask a question in the opinion of the chair? I want to understand what this rule
means. The senator will state her inquiry.
So is it the contention of the chair that under the rules of the Senate, I am not allowed to accurately describe public views of Senator Sessions, public positions?
Why doesn't she get up and get a, you know, the New York Times and take an ad out of the New York Times in which Jeff Sessions is described as a pedophile, a serial murderer, and a neo-Nazi, huh? I mean, according to her theory.
Of Senator Sessions, quote, public statements of Senator Sessions.
The chair has not made a ruling as respect to the senator's comments. The senator is following process and tradition by reminding the senator of Massachusetts of the rule.
Oh, I'm asking for what this rule means in this context. So can I continue with Coretta Scott King's letter?
The senator.
Can I continue to insult and attack this guy's integrity because it was the opinion then of somebody then? So this woman is just so typical of these just mindless people that don't care how much damage they do. Because obviously Sessions is going to get through. They want him to be another, who's the guy in the Supreme Court, the black guy that they turned into a devil? He has to be turned into that, right? So, and this lady is either too stupid to realize that the general rule has already been described, and she personally, at her own words, have not yet been censored, only because she has yet to say, in my personal opinion, Jeff Sessions is evil and unfit, and he's sitting on the right hand of Mussolini. But here we go. So here's Senator McConnell is about to get up and give her a slug.
Mr. President,
they are.
Mr. President,
the majority leader.
The senators impugn the motives and conduct of our colleague from Alabama, as warned by the chair. Senator Warren, quote, said Senator Sessions has used the awesome power of his office to chill the free exercise of the vote by black citizens. I call the senator to order under the provisions of Rule 19.
Mr. President.
The senator from Massachusetts.
Mr. President, I am surprised that the words of Coretta Scott King are not suitable for debate in the United States Senate. I ask leave of the Senate to continue my remarks.
Is there objection?
Object.
I appeal the ruling.
Objection is heard. The senator will take her seat.
Mr. President,
I appeal the ruling of the chair, and I suggest the absence of a quorum.
The clerk will call the roll.
So then they go out and vote on it, and she loses the vote, of course. But, I mean, these people, you know, I mean, they want to go down to the county, water hole and pee in it so that everybody has to suffer. They're just so, all right, we'll take a little break here and come back and talk about a little bit more, some more news, but it's just so symbolic. This lady who acts like a little girl who gets up and pretends she doesn't know the rules and is going after and attacking this guy personally and getting on the record her theory that he's a Hitler. And then when she's called to order, says, well, why can't we do this? This was stated in a letter by Coretta Scott King. So what? She could get up and read out of Shakespeare. That doesn't make it an exception to the rule. Anyway, 6:34, if you're a far lefty, there are no rules, of course. We'll be right back. 523-1450. AM Las Cruces.
Like rolling in the New York City.
You could be a member of Travis Street Country Club 5, April 28th,
for your local weather, 38 degrees and clear. And let's see what today's going to be 70 degrees, partial sunshine. So tonight, 41 degrees. And doesn't look like there's any chance of rain. So anyway, that's why I got this beef with this lady who I've actually did a an article on this lady, and I'm just so sick of these people that get up to tell the truth, right? She's going to get. I just listened to some interview that she did with Don the Lemon and Mr. Sourpuss, and she gets up and says, "I wanted to read this letter from Coretta King, and it was from 1987. It was so powerful, it was so moving, and they said I impugned his character." But I just wanted to get the truth out there. And it's like, you know, somebody writes a letter that makes it the truth. I just don't see the Democrats getting back into power for a while unless some extraordinary disaster occurs. Here's a little bit from Senator Orrin Hatch on this, though. Constant diatribe against Sessions.
It went on and on and on. And much of her remarks were criticizing a fellow colleague in the Senate. I don't know about the other side, but I find it offensive for either side to be criticizing, as was done here tonight, a sitting member of the Senate. I'm absolutely astounded that the Democrats, my friends on the other side, have taken to the war tables the desire to defeat Jeff Sessions. I've been here a long time, and I have to say that I've known Jeff Sessions even before he came here, and I've known him since he's been here. And yes, I differ with him on a number of issues, but I would never say things about him like have been said by my colleagues on the other side. I would think that we ought to all take some stock of what we're doing here. Jeff Sessions is a very fine person. Think of his wife. She's a really fine person. Jeff has been here 20 years. He's interchanged with almost all of us. Sometimes you agree with him and sometimes you don't. But he's always been a gentleman. He's always been kind and considerate of his colleagues. I can't name one time when he wasn't. Yet we're treating him like he's some terrible person who doesn't deserve to be chosen by the current President of the United States to be Attorney General of the United States. I think we ought to be ashamed of ourselves. I really do, on both sides. And frankly, we've got to get to where everything is not an issue here. I know some of my friends on the other side, and I've chatted, and they're not happy with the way this body is going. And with good reason. Everything doesn't have to lead to a gut fight on the floor.
All right, that's about a 10-minute statement, but I do agree. You know, the people that show up from the far left act like the first day they get in office, they're smarter than anybody else in the world. And I don't really get that. You see that locally as well. You know, people like this guy, Wayne Hancock, comes in from Florida, comes in on a Greyhound bus, puts his name into running for office the next day. And pretty soon he's making decisions on things that he couldn't possibly know about. He just got here. And, you know, he gets up and makes foolish statements like the population has doubled since 2007 when it's gone up by, what, 10%? And making public policy for people that he's never going to have to deal with, because as soon as he gets out of office, he goes back to Florida. And, I mean, was the guy here on a scholarship? You know what I'm saying? Not to impugn him, but you know, I mean, if I understand if someone has some sort of extraordinary training, but you know, to come in from another state, run for office, get in office, and start making decisions in an area you could not possibly know much about because you haven't lived there, and then you're removed from office and you leave. But when you're in office, you talk down to people, and very rude to Ben Rawson, very rude to the current chair, was very, very rude to her. This idea that you're going to get up and tell the truth and be rude to people, I find it absolutely astounding. That this attitude in the far left that has to be destroyed in the party, if that party is going to live. This Democratic Party at the elite level, at the leadership level, has got to get rid of this idea that you're the only people who have an education. You're the only people that care, have any commitment to the environment or to poor people or defense or whatever. You're the only one who's fit to make a decision on immigration or whatever. Because it's made it the party a laughingstock. I mean, after 8 years of going from one disaster into failure to diminished expectations. Speaking of which, I'm going to take a break and then come back and read you the news of the day, and then we're going to dive into this thing on Cyrus. Kelly O'Connell, 644 Kelly O'Connell, AM, pardon my redundancy, 523-1450 on AM Las Cruces. We'll be right back. All right, for your headlines, Republicans fearing for safety as Obamacare protests grow. Once again, you've got people in the party, in the right, in libertarians, unaffiliated, which has become a giant group of people out there, unaffiliated libertarians, some Democrats, and also a lot of Republicans are furious that these guys have gotten into office and they haven't done anything about Obamacare yet. All right, so military to rent space in Trump Tower, border wall won't be built all at once. That, I mean, goes without saying. What are you going to get a thousand companies out there to build it at once? Ramos, the commentator from Univision or whatever, I don't recognize USA. Many foreign nationals released rather than deported go on to commit more crimes is a study. NASA facility with deep space rocket takes direct hit from tornado. Holy cow. That's amazing. And Trump travel ban is in court. I've got a nice clip on that, but what I want to do is want to make sure I can get into this thing with Cyrus so you can think about that a little bit. EU faces new Greek debt crisis. Vigilante hacker hitting child porno sites on murky dark web. There's a vast sea of the internet that's hidden from view out there called the dark web, where a lot of stuff like child porn is found. And if you ever go in there, make sure that you have an attorney, because that's they will track you down. And looking for something else. Trump ready to approve weapons packages to Saudi Arabia, Bahrain that Obama blocked. Teachers now wearing body cameras to film unruly students. All right, so here, let's get into this comparison with Cyrus. You can make of it what you will. There has been a lot of talk of this notion that it is Donald Trump could be a Cyrus. He could be a secular leader risen up by God to achieve his things. I don't know about that, but here's the clip. This is from a website called Revival Prophecy. And this is about Cyrus.
Thank you. British Museum in London, exhibited in room 52 in the section covering the history of ancient Iran, is a small barrel-shaped clay cylinder inscribed in cuneiform writing. An exact replica is also displayed on the second floor of the United Nations Assembly Building in New York. The original object is one of the most important archaeological finds associated with the empires of the ancient world, an artifact named after and attributed to the exploits of a man known to Iranians as Quraysh Ibozorg, or in English, Cyrus the Great. This object is known as the Cyrus Cylinder, and it declares the victories of the celebrated king of ancient Persia and founder of the Achaemenid dynasty, Cyrus II, who between 559 and 530 BC ruled over the greatest empire the world had seen. Not only does this object represent one of the most important archaeological treasures of the history of the ancient world, but it stands as an amazing verification that the Bible is the inspired word of Almighty God. The Bible makes specific reference to Cyrus as the conqueror of Babylon and identified him as God's chosen instrument in the liberation of the people of Judah from captivity in Babylon to return to Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. The temple previously destroyed by the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar. However, the Bible does not merely record what Cyrus accomplished during his lifetime, it actually predicted the major details of his life and accomplishments almost 200 years before he was even born. An amazing demonstration of God's omniscience.
All right, I don't know how this guy's voice is starting to drive me crazy, but all right, so this character in the Old Testament, and he is also in the ancient world, he's Cyrus. Now, an extraordinary event occurred when this cylinder was discovered in 1879, and the cylinder, you know, go back to those days before there was a printing press, how did they get information out? So they took this cylinder, and the cylinder is somewhat damaged, but for the most, I'd say three quarters of it is still intact, and it has this running, you know, cuneiform on it, and it lays out the achievements of Cyrus, and it is one of the most, I mean, certainly probably top 10 archaeological finds in history, and it is a written declaration in Akkadian. I had mentioned to you before the Akkadian Empire contained Babylon, Syria, and was supposed to have been started by, the Bible actually says this, that these areas, these cities were started by Nimrod. And then they went on and tried to make the Tower of Babel. But in any event, it has a lot of on it of praising Cyrus, setting out his genealogy, and showing that he was a king of kings, and his military conquests, and his religious orientation. There was a pantheon in ancient Babylon that would have been approximately like the pantheon that was found in ancient Greece, but they also had a square like the Acropolis where all these religious deities would have been recognized in a physical square. So Marduk was the head of their pantheon of gods. And so anyway, he tells the story. And what this cylinder does is it confirms and expands upon a lot of the stuff that was said in the Bible. All right. That is some background for you. Let's take another break here and finish up our beautiful ads. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. A top scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, has come forward to expose the really crazy malfeasance, what they're calling malfeasance, but the unethical activity behind a key climate report report that was issued just before the United Nations Climate Change Conference in 2015. And what they did was they changed the data. They corrected it, in other words, that didn't fit in with their theory, and they did that, and they didn't archive the evidence. So if this guy hadn't come forward, who knows if we would have found out about this. And so this is the constant drip, drip, drip of information showing that they have a theory in which information and data for it has to be constantly falsified. If you have a true theory, why does it need constant adjustments and falsifications? 659. If it's true, we'll be right back after break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. We'll be back to talk about Cyrus. But I'm going to have a clip for you on an analysis of the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals as well on this issue for the ban. I heard you got the biggest trophy in town. Okay, so a little bit of, we were talking about whether Trump was God's anointed, according to a theory that's been out there for over a year, that God would call somebody. So I thought it was interesting. I was talking to somebody yesterday about it, and I decided to do it on the show today. The idea that, what if, you can attribute this to God or not, but what if Trump was the only person who could come along and be tough enough to put up with political correctness, all of the sneaky attacks from the left, the character assassinations? I mean, I don't know if the guy is bulletproof so much as people really don't care anymore, that they've seen the failure of far leftism. They've seen the failure of the development of a pansy GOP, the idea that the GOP owes the country one middle of the road candidate after the next, who then gets demolished in the general election. And then the country continues to get sucked down the drain. So there's an idea out there, at least in my mind, maybe this is the only guy that could come in and withstand all of these attacks just to try to push us back to the center. Now, here's a little bit on political correctness, and you're going to hear two of the biggest critics of Trump make astounding mistakes, which leads me to believe the Democratic elite field is getting somewhere between 70 and 80 years old. The Democrats are becoming extinct at the highest levels. And you'll hear Nancy Pelosi, I realized she was interviewed one time and she sounded like Porky Pig. I'm not kidding. The way Porky Pig would kind of say a few words and then hiccup and repeat himself, that's what she does a lot. I was always trying to figure out who she reminded me of. I'm not saying she's a pig, but her speech pattern, which I'll see if I can find that. But in Waters, this lady with this giant mouth, it looks like she could swallow a man whole. Two giant mistakes. Nancy Pelosi claiming it's George Bush that she's fighting with, and Maxine Waters claiming that Putin is about to invade Korea. And these are people at the front end of the attack on Trump. So maybe Trump isn't so bad off after all. Anyway, here is Political correctness as a failed intellectual undertaking, a total dishonesty. And this is on Hannity.
We are awaiting a decision from the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals about President Trump's temporary travel ban. As soon as they rule, we will bring you that news live. But first, at a press conference yesterday on Capitol Hill, Democrats, while they were a little bit confused about current events, when attempting to attack President Trump. You can't make this up. Take a look.
I have not called for the impeachment yet. He's doing it himself. Whether he's talking about his relationship to Putin and the Kremlin, knowing that he is responsible for supplying the bombs that killed innocent children and families in Aleppo. And the fact that he is wrapping his arms around Putin while Putin is continuing to advance into Korea.
We've seen nothing that we can work, or I can work with President Bush on, and I'm disappointed because I thought that there might be some interest because of what he said in the campaign.
See the faces of Maxine Waters and the other guy behind her? President Bush, Russia invading Korea. Joining us now with reaction, the host of Tommy on the Blaze, Tommy Lahren, who is a social media sensation. I met you at the the inauguration of Donald Trump and at one of the after parties, and I didn't get a chance to ask you, but I've seen like these viral videos of you where you have 45 million people watching you, and I'm going to break all the rules, but you're not politically correct, so I can. You're 24 years old, and yet you're so conservative, which, by the way, warms my heart. How did you become so conservative?
You've got to be honest. I think political correctness is intellectual dishonesty, and I don't even know if I'm necessarily conservative. I'm honest, and that often lends itself to conservatism. I'll agree with you. But I mean, listen to Nancy Pelosi. Listen to the farm team for the Democratic Party. They might as well be picking out their pantsuits for Trump's 2020 inauguration. It's that bad.
It really is that bad. But how did you develop, like, for example, I don't know why when I was young and a teenager, I had the radio on. My parents weren't saying turn off the TV. They were saying, shut that radio off. I can't take it. At 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd be listening to great pioneers of talk radio. Where did you develop, well, I won't say conservative, but let's say conservative libertarian, maybe ideology, philosophy? Because that's unusual. 24 years old to be fearless, outspoken on television, and, you know, and getting as much popularity as you are.
Doesn't matter. But this is this blonde girl that I think is on the Blaze. Very attractive and well-spoken. Now, here is this. This ruling that's going to come out on the Court of Appeals into the Supreme Court. So the question in my mind is, can this guy Gorsuch get into the Supreme Court before this decision is made? Now, this gentleman right here is former Whitewater counsel Robert Ray, who actually looks pretty young for having, you know, this is, you know, 20 or some years ago. Here is... here's this clip. This is very interesting. I thought he was, I don't necessarily think this guy is a Republican, but he's had a lot of insight.
You just heard from Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, who thinks he's optimistic the president's executive order, that is this travel ban, travel limitation, whatever you want to call it, will hold. But again, three justices are right now going to decide its fate later today. And maybe within hours come up with a decision and a response. Robert Ray, former Whitewater independent counsel. If you ever studied him during those years, an amazingly calm and reasoned individual. And I don't care whether you're on the left or the right. Those are rare qualities in Washington, period. But anyway, it's very good having you, Robert.
Thanks.
Handicap this for me. You were reminding me, and then I had heard this, that this particular court is often overruled and appealed. Why?
Well, it's the Ninth Circuit. It includes California. It tends to have more liberal judges. It's hard to know in any given case with regard to government power which way that swings. But,
yeah,
you know, in
the
this one
that they're right wing was a Bush judge.
Sure.
Right? So you never know.
And you have a panel with a Carter appointee, a Bush appointee, a third one. I can't remember now who the third one is. But, you know, a three judge panel will make a call on this. It sounds like the administration doesn't want to, even if they lose, go before an en banc hearing before the Ninth Circuit that they intend to go directly, if they lose, to the Supreme Court to ask.
So they have that discretion. If this goes against them, proceed to Supreme Court.
Correct.
And how soon would that be?
Well, I think the first step would be that ask for an emergency stay, which could be issued, at least in the initial stage, by the circuit justice, who is Anthony Kennedy. That would only hold until such time as the full court could make a determination about issuing a permanent stay pending review by the Supreme Court. A stay of that order of magnitude would require 5 votes. So you'd have a pretty good sense of what the Supreme Court thought if they issued a stay. To hear the case, it would only require 4 votes, but obviously if it's a 4-vote by 4-vote resolution, it means the Ninth Circuit's decision would stand.
And that would stand. How likely would it be then that a Gorsuch, if he's on the court, would be weighing on this very issue?
Well, it's a question of how soon the Supreme Court would hear this. I mean, I think they'd certainly do it before the end of this term. But oral argument would be scheduled. You know, there would probably be applications from the Justice Department for emergency review, which would accelerate things. I mean, if the Supreme Court wants to act quickly, they can act quickly, and they could act more quickly than
a
justice could be confirmed.
You're talking about the powers of the president. When it goes too far, the president's going to argue, White House has been arguing, these are about national security and safety issues. Do they make a point?
And I think the Supreme Court will likely act. I mean, not clear which way they will act, but they're likely to act quickly.
Now, the administration, to that point, has been arguing we're kind of dilly-dallying at a time when terror is alive and well, and this is a way to sort of, you know, be on the side of erring on the side of protection, and that the Constitution allows for the president's role in overseeing and protecting that.
Right.
Do you agree?
Well, they're arguing the merits of irreparable harm, and you know, a lot of attention has been given to the people who are prevented from entering the country under the executive order and the harm that they suffer. But the administration has a substantial irreparable harm argument about the fact that certain people could be let in. There's nothing we could do about it if the order is stayed or suspended. So that's the issue that's going to be addressed in the balance of equities. And yes, the administration has a substantial argument, and consistent with Supreme Court precedent going back to 1952, this is the president's prerogative that has been long respected. That is the power of the office of the presidency and executive power and control as commander in chief of the borders to secure the homeland. That's the administration's argument.
Now, I think even Secretary Kelly was saying this might have been rushed out too quickly. I think most people have acknowledged that at the very least it was speeded up maybe a bit prematurely. He took the bullet for a lot of the problems, even though others are pointing out he was brought into this a little too late and he was personally not happy with that. But having said that, the fact that protections have since been made for those with green cards and the kind of stuff that usually rankles the technology community, did the president already take care to address those issues?
Well, executive orders can be tinkered with, and to the extent they require, further attention, that can be given. But, you know, this is a situation where one federal judge is suspending what amounts to the president's prerogative with regard to an executive order, and that is the legal issue that's going to be tested. Tinkering around the edges is another subject, and you know, we'll return to that obviously once we get to resolve the legal question about whether or not the president's authority carries the day here.
It sounds like you have your doubts that this particular panel will stay on the side of the president, though.
The noises that you seem to be hearing is that the administration's likely going to lose at this level, which is why I think we may end up seeing Supreme Court review, particularly if the government does not prevail in the Ninth Circuit.
All right. And the other way around, the other side would do the same.
Well, you'd imagine, but then the Supreme Court has discretion to deny cert, which they may well do in that circumstance. But in a situation in which the administration loses, the United States loses, my guess is the Supreme Court, this is worthy of their attention.
All right. Robert.
All right. So the claim is that the Court of Appeals in California on the West Coast Ninth Circuit is a more liberal court, in that they could be reversed, not by their own in-bank standing. They're a group of judges that would come together, but that they would possibly be overturned by the Supreme Court. We'll take a little break here and come back and talk about Cyrez and Trump. 718 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450 to call in.
Good morning, Dad. I should turn on your Directors of the Apple Services Center in the Sea of Valley meeting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in the council chambers. 12 items on that agenda, including the election of officers for the upcoming year and our monthly updates from the office. If you're not able to attend that meeting, you can watch it stream live on the Cast Channel. Also, tomorrow, the County's ABA Advisory Board Committee is meeting at 10:05. The Board of County Commissioners are meeting at 9 a.m. in the Commission Chambers. There are 14 items on that agenda, including some employee recognition that is ordered to approve the municipal greenhouse holding both the Economic Development Act expansion project. That's an economic development tool for providing jobs in the county. If you're unable to attend that meeting, then on our website. Coming up next Thursday, the 16th, we'll have quotes from Animal Control, Code Enforcement, Planning, and Transportation Board, Board of Board. In and around the Holden Road neighborhood, offering education of weed control, pest control, and the right to use the food for your violation. We'll follow that up on Saturday, February 25th, with the roll off the mirror from the Council of Justice on this authority and the creation of record plan. Animal Services Center will set up for off-site vetting options with credit for 9-1.
All right, so gay affair rumors in French election. Favorite is forced to deny he is enjoying an extramarital liaison with radio chief Emmanuel Macron. All right, so here is a little more on Cyrus the Great. Just a little background and then a little analysis as to whether Trump could be the anointed, not the Messiah, but the anointed leader, even though he doesn't appear to be, according to most people, a lot of people, much of a Christian.
One of the most deadly, cunning, and effective military leaders of history has recently been touted as one of the world's first civil rights activists. King Cyrus the Great of Persia led his empire with a mixture of uncompromising violence and religious freedom for conquered people. With his new political take, he conquered the Empire of Babylon, in which was found the exiled people of Israel and Judah. The Hebrew prophet Isaiah had written over 100 years before Cyrus a direct message for him from God, preserved today as Isaiah chapter 45. The books of 2 Chronicles and Ezra have this fulfilled prophecy recorded, part of King Cyrus's decree to rebuild Jerusalem. Today, we know of King Cyrus's politics through the Bible and a cylindrical object that's 9 inches long by 4 inches wide. This document was written in ancient Akkadian and discovered in 1879 in Babylon. It's believed to have been a foundation stone, a commemorative text written for Cyrus as he rebuilt Babylon. The text speaks of Babylon and Cyrus and also outlines a critical policy. Cyrus allowed previously captive peoples to return to their homelands to rebuild their religious sanctuaries with public funding and their previously plundered costly religious icons. This is exactly what the Bible claims King Cyrus did for Israel. Once again, history as we unbury it is showing the Bible's account trustworthy. Another tremendous discovery was made in early 2010. Two fragments of a copy of the cylinder were found in the British Museum. These pieces originally came from a city south of Babylon, meaning there was a copy very close by in another important city of that day. It gives strong evidence to the fact that the cylinder's contents were distributed around the Persian Empire as an imperial decree of the king.
Pretty interesting, huh? Now, you might say, well, why would that king do, you know, support these other religions? Don't forget, in ancient Rome, they were interested in the gods of other people. So, and they would sometimes bring them in. The religion couldn't be a new religion. It had to be established somewhere else. Christianity was a new religion, so it was resisted by the Romans. Now, here is from a guy called Julian Raven, consider God's man and Trump, biblical examples, Cyrus the Great.
I think it's critical for Christians, evangelical believers, to get this straight. God's ways of choosing a leader are not man's ways. We know that from the book of 1 Samuel. We know that verse. Everybody remembers that verse. The prophet goes to anoint King David, and he goes to Jesse's house, and Jesse brings out his whole list of long line of sons, and here's my biggest and eldest and strongest and most handsome. And he's like, no, that's not him, and no, it's not him, and no, it's not him. I think it's seven sons that pass before the prophet Samuel, and Samuel's like, what, is that it? None of them is the dude. It's just not him. And they're like, well, there's one more guy, and he's out in the field, and he's like, you know, he's looking after the sheep, and he's not, you know, I want to see him. And it turns out that he's the one. And the scripture says basically that God does not see the way men see. So what we see as the perfect leader is not the way that God sees. Now, that principle applies across the board. That principle applies as just the principle that should be neutral in the sense of saying God chooses whom he wants based upon what he sees in their heart that God sees and not man sees. And I think it's incredibly interesting in the Bible that putting aside religious and spiritual leadership in the church or for the priesthood in Israel, we see that very clearly God chooses people based upon the need of the day. And I find the most striking example of a model of the way that God chooses a leader for a specific task is in the book of Isaiah, chapter 45. Again, it's a common known passage, the choosing and calling of Cyrus the Great. And we need to realize that the Persian Empire at the time, these were not theists in the sense of worshiping the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were probably polytheists with all different types of deities and idols. And they had a whole mix of faith. And it's not even clear historically what faith Cyrus the Great had. But what's interesting is that in Isaiah chapter 45, and I'm not going to go into this in depth right now because it's something that you can read for face value. Just read the first 5, 6, 7 verses, very clear of how God calls a non-believer. God calls a Persian, a non-Jew. God calls somebody who obviously was a idol worshiper, who had what we would see as huge moral failings and faults in the sense of compared to the standards that God had in the nation of Israel. And God calls him Mashiach. God calls him, translated in Greek, Christos. God calls him, translated in English, Christ. God calls him Savior, Savior of my people, Israel. In other words, Israel needed saving. Israel needed protecting. And it's very clear in the passage that he says that. And he chooses a man, Cyrus, and it says very clearly, you're going to do my job. I've called you. I've named you. I've anointed you. You are the anointed of God, the Persian, Cyrus the Great, the non-believer, whom God twice in the first few passages of that chapter in chapter 45 says, even though you don't even acknowledge me, and again, even though you don't even acknowledge me, amazing, the guy doesn't even acknowledge God. He doesn't even acknowledge the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, doesn't acknowledge the God of Isaiah, And yet Isaiah's prophesying, you're the anointed of God, you're the Mashiach, you're the Christ. It's incredible. That as a model, that is a standard in the way that God chooses leadership for a specific purpose. And he does say specifically right there in the beginning of chapter 45, how for the sake of my servant Jacob, for the sake of Israel, he says, I'm raising you up. In other words, he's going to use Cyrus the Great, raise him up. He says what he's going to do with him. He's going to bless him and prosper him and break down the doors and give him victories. Incredible prophecy about how God is going to be with Cyrus the Great on behalf of his people, Israel. Now, consider the times we're living in, folks.
All right, so take a little break here. But there's a doctrine in the Reformed movement called common grace. And the idea of common grace is that all people are part of God's plan, whether a person believes or not. And those people are given gifts by God, and so God would use everybody's works and activities to achieve his will. It's kind of an interesting theory. 7:30, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450. And a little feet Spanish Moon. We will be back after a little local news.
Well, the night that I got in the town was the night that the rain it froze on the ground. Down the street I heard such a sorrowful tune coming from the place they call a Spanish Moon.
Having worked for the governor when she was the DA here, I can honestly say I never saw the tiniest bit of racism in her. All right, here's a little bit more on Cyrus the Great, this non-Jewish leader who was used to save Israel. Some people feel like this is the model Trump is coming in. There's a little more on that.
Times that we're living in, out in the Middle East, where Israel is, and consider the prophetic nature of the day in which we live, and the rise of Islam, and the rise of militant Islam, and the rise of terrorism on one side, and on the other side, you've got the rise of this massive influx now into Western Europe of refugees, Islamic refugees. I mean, we see something, we see historic changes taking place right now. We need to say, my goodness, who is the leader in amongst these guys and amongst these candidates for president that looks like he could be the very one to be a Cyrus the Great, a very one to be the great leader, the great stature of a man who can stand up with courage and determination to lead this nation and to build defenses, and to go on the offensive even, to push back the horde of darkness, which our current administration has failed to do. And we've seen the rise and advance of ISIS. We've seen them grow and march across the Middle East and capturing huge swaths of territory right under our noses. Why? Because America made this huge mistake. I believe the current president Obama, backing out, taking out all the forces that we had in there. It's another subject for another day. It's just disturbing to even discuss it. But we need a leader. We need somebody who's going to fit this criteria. Who is the person? Donald Trump has come out in the defense of Israel, come out in the defense of persecuted Christians, come out in the defense of Christians. He's a Presbyterian. We know that. We know that his Presbyterian faith obviously may not be where we want it as Christians, you know, that he seems to be more of a nominal believer, a religious man who grew up and got a Bible at birth. And, you know, but you know what? It's his faith. It's the faith of his faith of his family. It's the faith of his mother and father, whom he loves and cherishes and speaks with them with reverence and respect, on and on and on when he goes on about the love for his mother and father. That's a huge testament to his character. And what was precious to them is precious to him. It's his Christian faith. And even though we might say, well, he's not Christian enough right now, well, you know what? He has the potential to become a Christian. Look at Constantine the Great, the most incredible story. The Roman Empire for 300 years brutalized and massacred the Christian church for 300 years, folks, and yet God raises up a Roman to then bring about change, because that Roman was confronted as an emperor with challenges that he could not meet, and he went praying to all the different gods of Rome, and he's getting nowhere, and he's like, I'm going to pray to the God of my father. His father had been converted. And so Constantine prays to the Christian God, and what happens? On the battlefield, he gets the vision of the cross, he hears the words conquer in this sign, and he then has a dream to confirm it. The next day he gets all of his craftsmen together, and he dresses his whole army in crosses and beautiful, you know, elaborate designs of crosses, this vision he had, and he goes out to win. And he doesn't just win, he then is the instrument of Christianizing the Western world at that time. You know, he abolished infanticide. He got rid of the equivalent of abortion back then in Rome. He abolished it. He did all these tremendous things on behalf of Christians. And this is a man who was converted. Now, when you think of Donald Trump, he's the only one, in my opinion, who has the stature. He could be of the stature of a Cyrus. He could be of the stature of a Constantine easily. He's already demonstrated. I try to think of, try to go back 100, 200, 500 years and place all the candidates like out in the middle of England. You know, imagine if they all were like lords, you know, living in their castles, you know, and you had Donald Trump in his castle, and then next to him, you'd have, you know, Benjamin Carson in his castle, or, you know, Marco Rubio in his, I don't even think he'd have a castle. He might have what I have, which would probably have been a shack.
That's pretty entertaining. All right, so let's, I think that point is made from this clip. Just something for you to think about. I don't know what I think about it. 7:39, Kelly O'Connell. We'll take a little break here. 523-1450 on AM Las Cruces. You're listening to KOBE, of course, and we'll be right back. And I've got a little bit of an interview from Trump that was done just a few days ago. So be right back. All right, so I've got a story here. ISIS unleash lady jihadi biting brigade armed with metal jaws to tear women to death. And chilling stories emerging from the Al-Qansa brigade as ISIS is battling back across Mosul in Iraq. It's a female-only group, and they serve as religious police for other women, ensuring they adhere to the strict moral rules laid down by ISIS, which are also known as the Sharia, the Sharia law. The brigade have now been armed with monstrous new metal jaw weapons used to torture other women to death. Evil female jihadis punish other women committing crimes such as breastfeeding outside, not wearing black socks or wearing high heels. And a woman speaking on the condition of anonymity, named only as S, revealed the new torture weapon. And so there is nothing that's more important to the Islam, radicals of Islam, and really to, unfortunately, a large number of Muslim, generally speaking, Muslims, and to be able to apply Sharia. And it is also, it's also a very unfortunate element of Sharia that the Sharia law cannot be abrogated, meaning it cannot be changed. So once an amputation law, always an amputation law, if you see what I mean. All right. Mexicans back the president's Trump snub despite mounting disapproval. And Enrique Peña Nieto has defied Trump and let him know they're not going to pay for the wall. And 64% of Mexicans interviewed of 1,000 Mexicans from February 2 to 7 approved of his position, but his position on that is beginning to slip, and his disapproval rate went up to 74% at the same time, despite canceling a meeting with Trump. And I think he was brilliant to have invited Trump over before he won, and he should have parlayed that into a special relationship, and instead he made a big mistake, in my opinion, just my opinion here, to then get into this fight. Now, here's a little of an interview. Here's just a little bit of an interview with Trump that I thought had some things in it that you would maybe enjoy a little bit. This is the third part of this interview, but he talks about the difference between being president and being just Donald Trump in terms of the size of the work at hand.
The most surprising thing for you about this job you have. You come from the private sector, no political office. Now you're the president of the United States. What surprised you?
I think the size, the magnitude of everything. So I was a very big real estate person. I'd build a building for $500 million or $900 million. And here you look at an airplane contract where you can save $600 million on 90 planes. I saved more than $600 million. I got involved in negotiation on a fighter jet, the F-35. And by the way, Lockheed Martin, a great company. But they weren't bringing their price up. I got involved. I saved more than $600 million. I was very proud of that. But the magnitude of, you can do that at every level of government. My new thing is going to be pharma, because we pay too much. We're the largest drug purchaser in the world, and they don't negotiate.
How many hours a day are you working?
I'm working long hours, right up till 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning.
What time do you get up?
5 o'clock.
All right. And you're working, you have to have breakfast?
Yeah, I read the papers, I see what's going on television,
right.
I take a look. I see the lies that, you know, the lies of, that's
right.
Another thing. I always got sort of good press. You know, I was a business guy. I got good press. I did
yeah,
good.
I know.
I have never, I call it, you know, fake news. Some of the networks and some of the papers, it's so, the level of dishonesty where they'll take a story that should be good. I know good from bad.
Sure.
They'll take something that should be a good story. In fact, sometimes I say, oh, this is going to be nice to read. I'll say, whoa. And they will purposely totally change it away. It's fake news.
Why are they doing that?
Well, because I'm on the other side of the equation. I don't think they did it to Reagan, but not as much.
Why, though? I don't understand.
I just think that it's just the other side of the coin. It's a, you know, they call themselves progressive, which is a beautiful word, but it's not true.
Do you think
when
they
you look
don't
at
like
what happens,
you?
I don't know. I think they don't like my. I don't think they like anybody on our side.
I know you a long time,
yeah.
And I know that, you know, when people attack you personally, that bothers you. So they're saying that you're anti-Muslim. They're saying that you're anti-black. They're saying that you're anti-poor. Do you respond? Because you do come back.
I always respond.
I mean, but does it hurt your
feelings
that they are making you into a hater?
No, because...
All right, so that's a little bit of that interview. We'll take a break here and come back with a few more stories. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces.
And hustlers, they fill up the room. I heard about this place, they call it Saturn's Moon. It's whiskey and bad cocaine.
All right, so industrial hemp has been okayed by the legislature. New Mexico Scout Council welcoming tranny kids. What do you think about that? You want your child sleeping in the same tent with a tranny? 523-1450. Now, Well, this is kind of a national trend. This guy that they, I think Tillerson was highly, extremely involved in the scouting as well. Juror pay emergency funding sought by New Mexico judiciary. If you didn't know, which I'm sure you do, generally speaking, there is a lack of funding in the New Mexican government right now because of the drop in oil revenue. And so the New Mexico judiciary is asking the governor and a state finance board to approve emergency funding for jury trials and to avoid furloughs of workers at the state Supreme Court. And Charles Daniels, Chief Supreme Court Justice, who heads the state's judiciary, has warned lawmakers that funding to compensate jurors and interpreters will run out on March 1st. And failure to approve it could lead to criminal cases being dismissed because of constitutional guarantees to a speedy trial, he claims, and also the right to a jury trial. And so this would be compensation for people missing work and such. And the bill also has $83,000 to avoid 9 unpaid staff furlough members from the state Supreme Court. And there's a House-approved bill to provide nearly $600,000 to ensure the pay on the jury trials. And so, and I was just talking to a judge about this the other day, and she might come on to talk about it. Now, there is $2.7 million in emergency fund balances that can be used at the discretion of the governor. So they might be using that. Hourly pay for jurors recently was reduced to $625 from $675 to save money. And travel reimbursements for interpreters and jurors were scaled back to 29 cents a mile from 45 cents a mile. Okay, so there's that. Here is about the roads. The roads in New Mexico stink, according to one report. Check it out.
A quarter of them are in poor condition. And do you have any idea how much money that's costing you every year?
Kasia Gregorczyk is live near the Montgomery I-25 interchange, one of the problem areas cited in a new study. She's going to break down some of the numbers from this national study that's pretty eye-opening, Kasia.
That's right, Tessa and Tom. The initial figure is pretty alarming. Problems on New Mexico's roads are costing us $2.3 billion a year. And another problem, the DOT's budget doesn't even come close to meeting the demand for repairs. A National Transportation Research Group just released this lengthy report breaking down the condition of New Mexico's roadways, highway safety, congestion, and cost breakdowns for all of it. In short, the study found that New Mexico's roads and bridges are deteriorating, and they are expected to get worse.
So how much are these transportation troubles costing you? In Albuquerque, motorists are shoveling out nearly $2,000 a year. In Santa Fe, the cost is about $1,000, and in Las Cruces, about $1,200.
How much the state has to pay for the improvements themselves is a different story.
I don't think they have their priorities straight with the money. I think they take money from schools to fix things, and they don't put enough money into schools or roads or any of the infrastructure at all.
The New Mexico Department of Transportation estimates about $1.5 billion in necessary projects. However, only $200 million is available, leaving the state's transportation department with a $1.3 billion shortfall. The study points out just how much work there is to do. It says 25% of our roads statewide are in poor condition.
And when you break that down by urban areas, more than a third of Albuquerque's roads are in poor condition, a quarter of the roads in Las Cruces, and in Santa Fe, 20% of the roads need work.
So where is this money going to come from? Right now, there's a few pieces of legislation proposing a tax on gas. However, they're not likely to pass. Our governor has said she's opposed to raising taxes. That includes gasoline taxes. Reporting live near I-25 in Montgomery, Kasia Gregorczyk, KOB Eyewitness News 4.
All right, so that's one out of four roads here. I, from my experience, maybe even more, we've got a lot of road work going on out there. New Mexico Organic Certification Program faces severe funding shortage And it's a program for inspecting and certifying organic farms struggling financially, leaving the state agricultural department at wit's end to identify options for saving the program. Just get rid of the program. Why? Because there is no standard in organic anyway. What is organic? All right, thanks for tuning in here. I'm looking at this last story here. Well, I guess I'll have to save this for tomorrow, maybe get into it, this idea that Susanna is a racist. Susanna's no racist. She's not perfect, but I don't remember anything that she ever did or said. She had all kinds of different people working in the DA's office. She's not a racist. How silly. And think about, is Trump the new Cyrus? Was he called by God? Was he called by God for a purpose, or does history happen by accident? Is everything that we're dealing with every day just a series of coincidences, just luck? Or is there a design behind everything? And if there is, was Trump chosen? Interesting theological issues there. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you have a wonderful day. And we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.